so what we're going to discuss tonight is really Amalek, understanding Amalek, and really begin with the question like my kids would ask, which is like, what is their issue? Like, what's Amalek's issue? Like, what is it about Amalek? Like, what are we have a mitzvah to eradicate Amalek, get rid of them. So what are we getting rid of? Is it people, human beings that we're trying to like literally destroy, kill? Is there something that they represent that we want to get rid of? And we have stories in Tanakh that discuss Amalek. And what are they telling us in those stories that are really human interactions? But what's like the deeper message about Amalek? Every year, before we begin Purim, we can't have a Purim without talking about Amalek. We have to have Parshat Zachor, that Shabbos. We have a mitzvah from the Torah. It's probably the only time out of the entire year where we have a mitzvah from the Torah to read from the Torah. We read from the Torah every single Shabbos, and we read tomorrow. Good Chodesh, everybody. It's Rosh Chodesh Adar tonight, which is very exciting. Now we have permission to have the napkins out. Rosh Chodesh Adar.
And Hamizash.
The worst today is
because
now there's Torah reading 4 days in a row. The happening
is
long Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Oh, that's right.
It's
2 days in a row.
So, it's 4 days in a row. So you have laning, and laning here is at the Kana Midor Rabbanan. It's some type of level. But when it comes to Parshat Zachor, it's biblical. That's why everyone's going to come out to hear laning on that Shabbos. This is not next Shabbos. This is in 2 Shabboses. So, what is that all about? So, this is not like a lecture. I'm not going to be talking the whole time. I'd love to hear it from everybody. So, if I had to tell you, what's Amalek? What do they represent? What do you have to say?
Baseless hatred.
Baseless hatred. It's like a random act, they hate us. It's not provoked by anything. What do you mean?
I mean, we were leaving and they followed us. And
good. So what's the example? Yeah, give me an example.
Stuck us in the back.
So that you're referring to?
I mean, from the original sources.
Good.
It says Asher Karach HaBadarach. It's all about coincidence and, you know, it just happened, like that there's no Yah Hashem. It's an ideology.
Right, so they have an ideology, which is like it's all...
chance happens.
Everything is chance and happens.
In our control, like that there is no God that runs the world.
So that's what they represent. Yeah. Jenny's saying that, historically, they attacked us. We left Egypt. We crossed the Amsuf. The Egyptians drowned in there. At the end of Parshat Bashalach, we're going to see the Pesukim inside in a moment, they went ahead and they attacked us for no reason. Not provoked, right? Think of, like, what's going on right now and still going on with Ukraine and Russia, right? Nothing provoked that.
I mean, they,
that's pretty. What
they want the land. It's not like it's not unprovoked.
Okay, so maybe Amalek's even worse.
I think Russia's not on the right. I'm not like defending them, but there's a goal. There's an end goal. I want this from Ukraine, whereas Amalek was like it was just.
What you're saying is it's even worse because like what do they want from
these
people?
What are they getting?
I hear that. We just started.
It's just an extermination.
Okay. Here. Right. Yeah. Okay, so let's begin inside. Hi. I didn't number the sources, but we have them just in order over here. So the Torah tells us, fascinatingly, at the end of Parshas Balak, Bilam had all these different nevuos, and at the end of, it's a funny story with what happens with Bilam, and he tries to curse the Jewish people over and over again, and each time he ends up blessing the Jewish people. At the end of the Parsha, he goes on and just shares these prophecies about the end of days, which really make no sense, and they're very hard to understand. So here he says the following about Amalek. Vayares Amalek, Bilam sees in a vision, he sees Amalek. Vayisa mishalo, vayomar. And he goes and says, he pontificates, and he shares. Reishis goyim Amalek, vachariso ade oved. Reishis goyim Amalek, the first of the nations was Amalek. V'achariso adei oved. And in the end, they're going to be nothing. They're going to be destroyed. So what does that mean? Literally means that Amalek was the first to attack. And they're not going to be here at the end of days. So do we need Bilam to teach us this idea? Right? Do we need a pasuk in the Torah to tell us that Amalek was the first people around? And now, and they're not going to be around end of days. Thank you. I know a little bit about maybe Mashiach. We've heard a little bit here and there. We try to understand a little bit. And we kind of get the point that Amalek won't be around at the end of days. So thank you so much, Bilam. But what does this mean? What does this mean? So that is question number one. What really does, or question number two, what's their issue was question number one. But really, what does Amalek represent? What is, why they first, what is Bilam telling us? Secondly, at the end of the story that Jenny just shared, Hashem tells Moshe the following. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem turns to Moshe after they win the war with Amalek. Right? How they win the war? Yehoshua fought in the battle, and Moshe had his hands up. And as long as Moshe's hands were up, the Jewish people were winning. When they went down a little bit, he got a little tired, the Jewish people began to lose. He was davening, he was showing the Jewish people, you're not really winning the war. Who's winning the war? I am. Hashem is doing it. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe. And he turns to Moshe and he says the following. Ksov zos zikaron besefer. This whole episode with Amalek, write this down in the book. What book is he talking about?
Ksov is zikaron is Navi and sefer is Ksuvim.
Holding on, let me drush him over here. Okay. Okay. Visim ba'ozne Yeshua. So some say this refers to the fact that the story of Amalek needs to be mentioned in all three books of Tanakh. Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. Right? It's got to be everywhere. We can't forget about the story of Amalek. V'sim ozne Yeshua. And also, place it in the ear of Yeshua. So we have Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. What does the ear represent?
Mesorah.
Mesorah, right? We'd call that Torah Shebaal Peh. Mm-hmm. Right? Torah Shebaal Peh. So it's, there's something about Amalek that can't be forgotten. Because I'm going to erase the remembrance of Amalek, the memory of Amalek, from underneath the heavens, right? It's going to be gone from here. Just parenthetically, like, how would you reconcile this? You have to remember Amalek, but we have to destroy him. We have to destroy their memory.
You have to remember.
So how does that work together?
Well, you can say you have to remember because they're going to be eradicated, so you don't forget. Like the same thing, we have to remember what happened in the Holocaust. It's over. Those people hurt that generation past. The people who perpetuated it past. Therefore, it's even more of an effort to make sure that we remember.
But what are we erasing?
Their ideology.
Yeah, I think right. the what they stand for, what the abject hatred.
So Timcha Zecha Amalek means to erase their hatred, get rid of that.
Zechar Amalek, the memory of Amalek, what they leave behind. So we want to erase their ideology, what their residue, what they represent, but remember, what they did to us so we can fight against it.
Or we have to remember it until it's completely eradicated.
And then when it's eradicated,
but it's not a thing anymore.
It's not a thing anymore. Okay. See, if you think about our generation, what's happening now is like, people don't know about the Holocaust anymore, right? If you use that modern day example, because the further away we are, so it's more like,
it comes back.
Right? That's why it's coming back.
Right, the importance of remembering something even when it's not there anymore, so that it
doesn't matter.
To understand it.
Mm-hmm. Great, good. Okay. Vayiven Moshe Mizbeach, Vayikra Shemo Hashem Nisi. So Moshe makes a Mizbeach over here to recognize the enormity of the miracle that happened. In fact, the Mishnah tells us that if, theoretically, if you ever bumped into the rock that Moshe stood on to lift up his hands, where this miracle happened, you would make a bracha. You'd make a bracha, Baruch She'asa Li Neis, or Baruch She'asa La'avoseinu, Neis Be'Makom Hazeh. Whenever...
What? Do they know where it is?
I don't think we know where it is. Hmm. But we learn from there also that if you had a personal miracle happen to you, then you would make a miracle in that place.
Can we do that and avoid, like, go to a concentration camp? And we know that we have family there?
Maybe we would.
Grandma
I don't know.
Ann said it.
Your aunt said it where?
No, Grandma Ann. Mira, like, there's
Grandma Amira's, Ann. Yeah.
She said it. We were there in
the concentration camp?
Yeah. I think when we went to concentration camp, it was...
That's reasonable.
And, a lot of the Southerners do colon
cancer. Yeah, yeah.
So if you're in a camp where you know that you're...
You survived.
A great grandparent was saved, literally.
That's amazing.
So what do you say?
Baruch Hashem Hashem Li Neis Malkom Azah or Lav Osei. Like grandchildren can make this bracha also for their grandparents. My father was actually in a Erev Hurricane Sandy. It was a Sunday morning at 5 a.m. He was working a job through the night. When he's working in a hospital, you have to work through the night because that's when they get shut off certain parts of the hospital. And he was driving a lone guy on the road, and someone tried to like cut him off, and he swerved, moved this way, and then he moved that way, and the car flipped over, literally flipped over, and the entire car, the top of the car, ripped off except where he was sitting.
Wow, gosh!
I have the pictures to prove it. It's amazing, and we. That after chakras, I went straight to the hospital, got back because everyone was talking about this big hurricane that was going to happen. He's like, you need to go back home. And thank God he was okay. Got out of the hospital for like 2-3 hours, or Hashem, excuse me, flooded with other people, literally. And the psak that we received was that anytime we drive by that place, if within 30 days, that was a miracle. Like he makes the bracha at that place. That's more than gomel. Wow. He made a gomel, but this bracha also is warranted.
Which
in that location. Okay. Okay. Vayomer, last pasuk here. Kiyad al keska milchama l'Hashem ba'amalek. Right? Vayomer, it's not clear who exactly says this. Most likely it's Moshe. Says, Kiyad al keska. The hand is on the seat of God. Milchama l'Hashem ba'amalek. This war with God with against Amalek, midor dor, will last forever, right? Will last forever, right? It's not just a one-time moment in history, but this war with Amalek is going to be forever. The Torah is telling us that this is going to be literally forever. So, what is it, right? What is it about this that's going to be forever? Next. Right after this story in the Torah, we have Parshas Yisro. The Torah tells us, Vayishma Yisro, Yisro heard everything that happened to the Jewish people. And Rashi tells us, what did Yisro hear that compelled him and like motivated him? Kriyas Yamsuf and Mohammed Samalek. Rashi says two things. He heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, great, and Mohammed Samalek.
Oh, sorry, what's the second one?
The war with Amalek.
Oh.
Right? The truth is that the story with Yisro didn't necessarily happen right after the war with Amalek. That's like a big discussion about chronology in the Torah. And did that happen next or not really? So Rashi says it didn't necessarily happen right afterwards.
Rashi Ramban says this.
Good. You can teach Chumash in Frish too. Forget about math. Great. Awesome. So
why forget? Both.
Well,
we said both forget about math. Both.
Yeah. So, Vayishma Yisro, what did he hear? Kriyas Yamsuf, that I understand. Nechamas Amalek, that's like a little bit funny. I heard all the miracles, then wouldn't that be enough? What is unique about Kriyas Yamsuf, Nechamas Amalek, that Yisro heard, okay? Last point here is that in Parshas Ki Tetzé, this is what we read on two Shabbases, on Parshas Zachor. So my bar mitzvah parsha is parsha Ki Tetzé. And so this is like a very close relationship with parsha Zachor. I got bar mitzvah in the summer. And my birthday is in the summer. So I never celebrate my birthday because like it was June 26th. So it's like right in between
camp and
schools. Like no one was ever there. So it's okay. So by me talking about it, it's good. So my birthday is Parshas Chukas. My bar mitzvah is Parshas Chukas. I landed in camp.
Clearly, there's still residual
trauma. Well, yeah, for sure. There is. She was like, "Why didn't you carry your birthday?" I'm like, "Cause I never celebrated it." So I landed. I remember the first Aliyah in camp. My parents came, and then I landed like Ki Tetzé. It just made sense. It was like 2 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, 2 weeks after camp. It like just fit. And what?
That's why we're gonna do Shimon.
Oh, because Shimon's also he's Beis Chanan, right? And so with Varam.
I'm not sure.
I remember it was.
When's his birthday?
It wasn't Shabbos Chazon.
Oh, really?
It was, I remember the okay. Yeah.
It's coming up.
It was a Shabbos bris. That's what I remember.
Another year.
Yeah.
A year and a half.
Mm-hmm. So we lane. these four psukim from the Torah, and they say the following. So it's cool for me as a bar mitzvah boy that everyone stood up for me. I didn't stand up for the laning. That was like really cool.
No pressure.
Like that wasn't like for anybody else. So Zachor Eis Asher Asalach Amalek. Right, this is the mitzvah from the Torah. You must remember what Amalek did to us. Baderech Betzeischem Mimitzrayim. What they did for us when we left Egypt. Asher Karcha Baderech. That they chanced upon us on the path. Vayizanei Becha Kohanecha Shalim Acharecha. And they chased after the people that were in the back. They didn't. Who did they attack?
The stragglers.
Right? The stragglers. The people that were slow, right? The people that couldn't make it to the front. Those are the people that they attacked, right? They prey on the weak. Think about that. Va'ata yefei again. You guys were exhausted. Ve'lo yarei Elokim. They attacked us when the Jewish people themselves were spiritually very weak. We were at a point where we were questioning God. Vayabaniach Hashem Elokecha lecha mikol oyvecha misaviv. And when Hashem removes all the enemies from around us, ba'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lecha nachal l'rishta timcha et zecher Amalek. When you get to a point where all your enemies are gone, what do you need to do? You need to eradicate the memory of Amalek. Mitachas Hashemayim, that's the same language. Lo tishkach, eradicate them, and don't forget them. Right? Same idea. Eradicate them, and don't forget them. Okay. Any questions on this? On these people? You actually read the last pasuk twice.
Why are we so bipolar with her? Amalek vibes?
What do you mean?
Meaning like we're saying erase and also remember.
Erase.
Like completely erase them, but like never forget.
Right. Erase them, never forget them. Right? It's like, it's a funny way of saying it. The last pasuk, we should know that we read it twice, because it's not a clear mesora whether the it's a tzera under the word zecher, or it's a segel. It's a ze or a zecher.
Zecher?
Zecher or zecher, yeah.
Never
we're not sure.
Zecher.
Right, so the Baal Kore reads the pasuk, and he reads the first zecher, he stresses it, and then he'll stress the zecher.
I don't think they told me that. I've never heard the word zecher.
What?
Never heard the word zecher before.
I had a kid in my class whose last name was Zecher.
Zecher, really?
Yeah, Zecher. Zecher? Wasn't Zecher? You remember?
What was his first name?
He was Eitan Zecher. He was in the high grade in Yavneh.
Same word.
So he was, maybe, maybe he's like from like the tribe of Ephraim.
I don't know. What?
Ephraim, Yehoshua, the story of Amalek. Maybe he's from there.
I could ask him. I just saw him the other day.
I did. I really.
Also memory. It's just not clear what the pronunciation is. And if this is from the Torah, we have other psukim like this in the Torah that also have, like, we're not clear, but
yeah,
it's okay to read it once because it doesn't change the meaning of it.
Like in the Megillah,
but
right.
But we change
the meaning.
But
you're saying
that means
the same. So
yeah, but if biblically, this is we're mandated to read this. We have to read it the right way.
See.
Same thing is true in the Megillah. There are a few psukim in the Megillah that are like that. So sometimes, like the Baal Kore is going to read a few psukim twice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love when they do that.
Me too.
And it's like, wait a minute, did he mess up? What's going on here? No, he didn't mess up. It just. There's different mesoras to exactly how to read the pasuk. Exactly. Okay, so these are our questions for now. What is Amalek's issue in general? Why did they go ahead unprovoked and attack us? What does it represent? What is Reishis Goyim Amalek? Why does Bilam need to tell us that they're the beginning? V'achariso ade oved, and they go ahead and they will not be around at the end of the days. Why does that matter? And why are they always, this is like fascinating, and they're always going to be around, like Midor Lador, and how does that connect to Yisroel? Those are our questions, and you can turn the page. What I want to share with you now is really an idea from Rav Yitzhak Huttner. Rav Huttner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chaim Berlin. Yeshivas Chaim Berlin can be found at Coney Island Avenue and Avenue K, right there. Familiar? Should be. It's a very special yeshiva. He was Rosh Yeshiva. He studied in Yeshivas Chevron in Eretz Yisrael for many, many years. And he had very fascinating influences in his life. Yeshivas Chevron, obviously, was more like right wing. And he was also very connected to Rav Kook. Mm-hmm. And so he had a lot of different influences in his life. And he was one of the first people, historically, to really teach the Torah of the Maharal. The Maharal is like more out there, more like, you know, big picture, very deep. No one really taught his Torah publicly until Rav Huttner was like really teaching his Torah. And he has like many Talmidim that really like span the spectrum across the globe. So there's he has Svarim on all of Moadim called Pachad Yitzchak. They say that they were written by, I don't know, he didn't write them. There were talks that he gave on the Yom Tovim, and they're most likely written by his daughter, Rebbetzin David.
Oh, right.
Rebbetzin David is the head of BJJ in Beis Yaakov of Yerushalayim, and most likely she wrote all of them. She's brilliant. She's alive today. She runs BJJ. Maybe her husband also, but most likely she edited his farm. Okay, so he has an idea here on Purim. It's his first piece on Purim where he talks about Amalek, which makes sense. If we have to get in, the entranceway into Purim is you have to bypass Amalek. So he talks about this. And for me personally, I go back to, like, we try to learn new ideas, but sometimes, like, you go back to the ideas that you learned, like, when you were younger. And, like, they really connect with you and they resonate with you, and sometimes you go back to them. So this is an idea that I go back to in many years about really what Amalek represents. Before we get there, Moshe Sternbach addresses the following issue. What is Amalek, right? Is Amalek a nation? Meaning, Amalek pops up many times. Who is that notably in the Megillah? Who's from Amalek?
Haman's
from Amalek, right? Haman's from Amalek. We have a nation. Shaul is living in the times of Shmuel HaNavi. He becomes the first king. And one of the first jobs that he's given is to destroy the king of Agag and his nation because they are Amalek. That's what tells us. In order to build a base of Mikdash, you have to do two things. You have to make a king, destroy Amalek, and then you can build a base of Mikdash. It's codified in the Rambam, Hilchos Malachim. So they made a king, Shaul. Now, Shaul, your job is to destroy Amalek, and then, da-da-da-da, you can build a base of Mikdash. Shaul messed up. But there seems to be a nation called Amalek. David, lesser known, is that David, when after Shaul died, about 14 chapters later, in Sefer Shmuel Aleph, he just killed Amalek. He was like ransacking different places that people that were like really hurting, bothering Jewish people. One nation was Amalek. It seems to be that like there is a nation called Amalek. If that's so, if that's accurate, then what about today? Like we don't think of the Egyptians that live today as like.
Our oppressors. We learned that the weren't we told in elementary school that the Nazis were on Amalek?
Right, and is that...
Iran,
it's Amalek. So what does that mean?
Really, but I thought it's not true.
It means Amalek is, you know, purpose is to destroy
right.
Jewish people.
Right.
Like,
evil that's,
they
and
make it
so who, when you're saying, so however is...
Like in every generation,
right.
There's Amalek.
Right. So this idea is quoted, I first saw it quoted from Rabbi Salvechik in the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim Salvechik, and where he writes, he was probably the greatest or most innovative, it's a better word, Torah scholar in the 20th century, and he revolutionized Torah learning to today. It affects every yeshiva in the entire world, the way that he learns, and he said that he had a Masorah, dating back to the Vilna Gaon, that Amalek is not a formal nation, but Amalek is really, what it really is that it's a people, it's an ism. They have an idealism to destroy the Jewish people. So whenever a nation comes up, that nation is Amalek. While that sounds very powerful, and I'll just share with you, this is unbelievable, there's a Gemara Yuma that says, it names like three cities, there are cities that belong to Amalek. One of the cities that the Gemara says, again, the Gemara is written 2,000 years ago, is Gimel Reish Mem Mem Yud Aleph.
Germany.
Germania. The Vilna Gaon has emendations to the Gemara, where the Vilna Gaon says, that's not really the word the Gemara had, I have a different Masorah. And the Vilna Gaon died in 1796. So he changed the words of the Gemara, not the Gimel Reish Mem Mem Yud Aleph, but the Gimel Reish Mem Nun Yud Aleph.
In 1700.
Yes.
But he could. Yeah. He could. He was a Gaon. He was allowed to.
No, that's on the point.
Right.
The point is that
so
in the 1700s, Germany was not the,
exactly.
The worst offender. Yeah. There were lots of others.
It's a lot more to say about this. It's, but I want to go in a different direction. I want to go. It's important to know this. And Rav Moshe Sternbach quotes this Misora. Rav Moshe Sternbach is one of the Gedolei HaDor today. He lives in Har Nof, and he was a Rav first in South Africa. Did a lot of Kiruv and built up the Torah infrastructure in South Africa. And is one of the more the Haredi head of the Badats and Eda Haredis in Eretz Yisrael today. And has a lot of Sfarim, which are really, really beautiful. Very clear. He was a student of the Brisker Rav, Rabbi Soloveitchik's uncle. So he quotes the same Misora, from the same line, from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that's what it represents. It's unbelievable on many levels. The challenge with it is, if very practically, we need to eradicate a Malik and kill anyone that's a member of a Malik. What that means is, if you bump into a Nazi on the street, then what's your obligation?
Don't we need a basement?
What? Maybe.
I want to go to jail. So
right. So
this is that's the most problematic.
Right.
This was in the Torah.
Well, sure.
Doesn't
yeah.
First
we
have
to kill people.
We need a king first.
100%. Right.
It's probably the most problematic.
Right. You're right. So maybe next year we'll talk about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein as an essay on this, and how like if I have a morality, and it's like who defines what's moral, and who defines what's moral, the Torah, or like can outside Torah, right, influence what is moral, or no, what the Torah says is moral. So it's moral to kill a Malik. Or maybe it's not moral to kill a Malik, but the Torah says you should do it anyway.
One of the Torah says it's not to kill.
Right, exactly. It goes against every hack
that
we're told.
Yeah, yeah. So I want
right,
to go.
Right, but then you could say that all of Navi, oh my gosh, they're killing the entire time.
Well, yeah. It's tough. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but at least so, in Navi, they had
a goal.
Like a bigger purpose.
Right, but if this was
yeah.
the same
this
time as
purpose.
The Navi, which was to erase Amalek, but okay, whatever generations before that
yeah.
it said to erase Amalek, so
yeah. But this seems a little different because it's saying never forget and like
right.
it's
also
guards up guard, 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 forever
right.
you should be killing
yeah.
them, not just like in our
right.
ancients and there's all
yeah.
like,
right.
yeah.
So like is it even relatives of Nazis, like generations now?
No.
Well, has
no. So,
haven't even decided
so
if Nazis are
Rabbi
right.
Soloveitchik said, so I'll tell you where this actually comes into play in a very significant way. In 1952, the German government, which was very much changed over pretty fast, said, we want to give reparations to the state of Israel. So they asked, I have like a whole booklet on this topic. I find it very fascinating. And there was almost a civil war in Israel
mm-hmm.
between Begin and Ben-Gurion on this topic. Begin
was
very against. There's a great picture of him.
Wait,
you know, like
what money?
Yeah,
money.
Money.
You know, like the bottom of Ben
right.
Yehuda,
money.
Where like, the Kent is.
Because we're not supposed. To...
I haven't been to Israel in a little while, but across the street on top, there was like this old hotel.
You can't buy
the Kikar something hotel. It was a porch there. He was standing on the porch, rallying thousands of people against Ben Gurion.
Right.
Why was he there and not in the Knesset? Because he was kicked out of the Knesset.
Right.
Because he's awesome. Read his biography. Daniel Gordas wrote a great biography about Menachem Begin. It's a must read. It's really, really good. And so there was almost, almost a war in Israel about this. But they asked rabbis, so the generation, like, are we allowed to accept this? And Rabbi Soloveitchik said, no, you can't take things from the Nazis. Because you can't take things from, he said they're Amalek. He said they're Amalek, you can't do it. Obviously, didn't ask him because they took it. They took it anyway. They took it.
Yeah, they should.
There was a certain prime minister, Yitzhak Rabin, would not drive a Mercedes,
yeah.
even though it gave him the most protection. He refused.
There's also which prime minister like refused to spend the night in Germany, so they would go over the border from Minsk, but go back over the border.
Makes sense. I hear it.
Whatever.
I hear it. Yeah.
So they refused
yeah.
to,
yeah.
In the secular.
Yeah.
Refused to spend the night.
Right. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but
one second, like. I have a Misora that I'm not allowed to drive a German car.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
comes from
there. You go. That's
yeah.
where it comes from.
Yeah,
right.
It comes from.
Mm-hmm. So, but later on, Rav Shechter writes in one of his Svarim that Rabbi Soloveitchik changed his mind.
Really?
And
about reparations.
He said, yeah, he said that, number one, he said that, you see how helpful it was.
Yeah.
Maybe they couldn't go to, how helpful it was, and they really needed
yeah.
it. Okay. And secondly, he said, by the fact that they were willing to help, and they said, we're disassociating ourselves
yeah.
right,
with the Nazi party, yeah. And he says we're no longer a Malik. Right? But you, this debate, right, it was meaning fascinating.
They, what's the word? Not changed.
They did tshuva.
Tshuva, yeah.
No,
tshuva,
well,
yeah.
Wasn't even, not all of the Germans were Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One time I had a patient, and he was in the, he was in the Air Force, the German Air Force.
Yeah.
And I would have assumed he was Nazi, and he said no, he was forced to join.
You said to him, are you a Nazi?
Yeah, he told me he was like 92.
I've asked my patient if he was a Nazi before.
I said, oh, how was it during the war?
I had a German patient, it was like 80 something. I was like, oh, were you a Nazi?
Yeah.
I'm so sure.
What did he say?
He said yes.
So mine said no, and he said that he was the worst time of his life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well.
There's
a lot of
documentary about this, like,
wow.
the most prolific
like,
nurse
oh,
murder.
Cool.
Dude.
Wow.
No, I really didn't want to be his nurse.
Yeah, well,
I hear that.
But
I hear that.
Was.
Okay.
Better not to ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, it's usually better not to ask. Just...
Okay, so I'm going to...
Choose the opposite.
We're going to take it from the... I think this is very practical in many ways to more, but less relevant today, perhaps, to more from the Derech Avoda. So the Kedushas Levi writes, it's on the next page, you don't get to turn to the page, but Kedushas Levi writes that just like we have a world, and in the world there is an Amalek that we have to eradicate, so too every single person is their own world, and there's an Amalek inside of all of us. And that's where I want to take this with Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner now says the following. Huttner now says, he quotes a pasuk in Mishlei that I did not put on the source sheet. My bad. He quotes a pasuk in Mishlei which says, "Lates take," the lates. What's a lates? How would you define the word lates?
A
mocker, right?
A clown,
right? A latesan is a clown. Lates take. You should hit the scoffer, the mocker. Upesi, the simple one, yarim. The simple one should be lifted up. So lates take, the Medrash says, is a malik. Right? The scoffer, the mock, should be hit. And the pesi, the simple one, that is Yisro, should be uplifted. Now he says, you see from there, that what is the nida of a malik? They are a lates. What is lates on us? What is the depth of a lates? It's just a mocker? Like, why is a clown? Right? Why is a modern day word? Of a late.
So
what is a late?
Like, you know, like after like a share and everyone's inspired, and then they make that first snarky comment, and like the bubble is popped.
Amazing. Good. So let's, yeah. What are you saying?
The little,
right? Knock things down. So he says the following. He says here, we're not going to read it all inside, but he says that you have two people. One person, he says, is learning Torah day and night. And the other person is very simple, is not involved in learning Torah at all. And then you have, he says, so on the outside, person learning Torah, like, check. The person not learning Torah, X. But then you look at, you probe a little bit deeper, and you see, what do they give respect to? Like, what do they talk positively about? The guy's learning Torah all day, he says... comes home, and you know what he does? He makes fun of, he mocks other people that are learning Torah. He mocks rabbis, he mocks Torah leaders, Torah scholars. He's learning Torah all day. The other person, he lifts them up, right? He only wishes that he could become. He says, who is better off? He says the following, which is a powerful idea. What's a pasuk in Mishlei, which is on our sources? Matzreif lekasef, the kor lebarzel, the ish lefi mahalo. The refining pot is for silver. A furnace is for gold, right? The way that you mine for these things is different. Silver and for gold. The ish lefi mahalo. And a man, based on his praise. The literal, like the understanding of this pasuk is, just like a refining pot is for silver and a furnace is for gold, how do we know how to define a person? See what other people say about them. That's a literal translation of this pasuk. But that's not the way Rabbeinu Yonah understands this pasuk. He says, the better the refining pot, right, the better the silver comes out. The greater the furnace, the better the gold. Ish lefi mahalo. You want to know what's really inside a person, what do they praise? What do they give respect to? You know, what's on your wall, right? Right? What posters you have on your wall? Okay, you were a kid. What was on the wall?
We weren't allowed to hang up posters.
You weren't allowed to hang up posters. Okay. Okay. So he says that that really is what defines who we are. You know, my car is, we try to keep it clean. It's not always, we aspirationally keep it clean. And I remember one time the car was spotless, and one of my kids gets in and is like, who's coming into the car?
Who are you taking?
Who's coming? They're right. Like, Rav Shachter was here for a year.
Exactly.
Yeah, they'd be better at that car. So sorry for the meeting. But like, what do you clean up your house? Like, what do you give chashivas to? Right? What do you, you know, get dressed up for? That shows, like, subtly, really what we respect and says a lot about us. I think there's a way on social media also to do an internal check and see what words you use most often on social media. Like, if you could do that for yourself, and like, you, I don't know how many words we say a day or how many texts we make, but if we could say, what words come up most often, that maybe can say a lot about us. What do we spend our money on? Like, not like on the groceries, but there's extra, or what do we find extra for? Really says a lot about us. And he says the following. He says that when it comes to elates, what is elates? That's called koach hahilo, the showing the strength in praising things, right? What is elates? They have the koach hahilo, or the koach hazilzol, to profane anything. Like, Handel, your example was perfect. I have one of my rebbeim once told me, he's a shul rav, and he said to me that one of his presidents was a very funny guy, and he would always make a joke, like Rabbi give a drasha, and like he would somehow, and like, you know, he would have musaf to think about it, but he would make a joke connected to the. And one time he gave like a very, I don't remember what it was, like very serious, intense drasha about a topic that needed to be addressed in the community. And he asked permission to say the joke. And he's like, absolutely not. Hmm. Very nice person. Like, he's not a, and afterwards he's like, come on, what's that? Can you don't understand. Like, when you make a cynical joke about something, what happens? The whole building is like beautiful. You build
it's the Jenga.
You see that one crack and it knocks down the whole thing. So I know you didn't, that wasn't your intention, but that's what very easily can happen. So he says that elates really is a cynic. A cynic. Somebody that could take something so big and just one knock, Jenga's good, knock down the entire thing. The entire edifice. And he says, really, that is the entire mahus, the entire essence of Amalek. What Amalek is what do? Asher karcha baderech. Essentially, what they did is that the Jewish people were like, everyone was so afraid of them. They destroyed the most powerful nation in the entire world without lifting a finger. All they did was cross through the water. Namogu kol yishvei Kanaan. And what Amalek did, Amalek knew they were going to lose. Rashi tells us, they knew they were going to lose. What do they want to do? They wanted to cool us down. Asher kar chabaderech, from the language of kar, cold, krivus.
They wanted the bathtub.
They got burnt. Didn't bother them. They wanted to just cool us down. Knock us down from where we are. Who knows? Right? If they didn't do that, like, where would history bring us? Like, maybe it would have been a little bit easier to get along with everybody. Maybe things would be a little bit different, perhaps. So that's Amalek's Mida. It's a Mida of cynicism. They're elates. They have the koach hazilzol, koach hachilo, to knock things down. And Mesillas Yesharim writes that one act of cynicism, of elates on us, can knock out 100 acts of rebuke. Right? Tochacha. Kanaka, it's here on the bottom of the next page. Just going. And essentially, that's what we're talking about over here. And so I just want to, so just to review our questions. Reisha's Gaya Mamalik says, this is a Rafutner's idea. Bacharisu Adi Ovid, he says like this. They're going to be the Reisha's Gaya Mamalik because they were Reisha's Gaya Mamalik, because they were the beginning. Bacharisu Adi, in the end of days, the end of days represents that everything is going to be fixed. They can't be fixed. A cynic can't be fixed. We believe in the individual cynic. They can always be. This Mida itself doesn't belong in the end of days. So lachariso adi ovid. It's going to be gone. There will be no cynicism, no mockery at the end of days. This is something that is so important that we can't forget about. Right, the koach of chashivas, of building things up and not knocking things down. Yisrael was elevated. Same two people saw the same thing and had completely different reactions. Amalek saw this, let's go in and attack. Yisrael saw this and said, wow, who are these people? I need to learn more about this. Right? And we do this all the time to ourselves. Sometimes for ourselves, we're like, you know what? I'm going to take on something new. I want to get a little bit closer to Hashem. I want to take on one more mitzvah. But then you know what happens a second later? Nah. How'd that from? You can't do it. That's not who you are. Like, what are people going to say about you? And you become the cynic for yourself, saying, it's not me. It's not me. And that entire plan of whatever you wanted to do, maybe you tried it, it's completely, completely gone. We don't give ourselves that chance to attempt to grow. And that, yeah, go ahead.
I think our whole generation is belittling things. Like, we belittle we don't value things that they used to value, like religion, life, like, just... Everything nationwide, everything's we're the me generation. So other values like ethical morals that we used to have is like, it's a joke now.
Isn't that what every generation says about the previous generation?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But I think it's worse.
It's like a natural cycle.
That what? That
that like we had values, the new generation doesn't, and then that generation that grows up becomes the parents, becomes saying we have values.
So it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Or the perspective is like,
I think it's the same for us. Like, right. From where we are, it's the same for us where we are. And that makes it much harder.
So, I think as a people, though, the generations before, they were more religious nationwide than they are now.
There's a lot more to learn now.
Yeah,
people might have been more religious, but they knew less.
I'm not talking about Judaism. I mean, you're
talking about generally.
Yeah, I mean as a people. I don't mean Jewish people. I mean values as a people are just less.
Yeah, but that also came with like negative things. You know?
Right.
Like religious
ignorance, persecutions, and things like that.
Saying the higher religion that they had came with negative things,
like religious fundamentalism.
Yeah.
If you're not our religion, like burn everyone.
Right.
Also, it shifted. Like it was Christianity, Catholicism, and now it's Islam.
Right.
Islam is growing.
Or atheism, which
consider themselves very religious.
But the atheists are not burning people in cages.
But they're persecuting people who don't think like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So meaning like any
religion
fundamentalism,
any
great for anybody else.
Right.
You know?
It's a great book, Not in God's Name, by Jonathan Sacks.
Yes.
Excellent. Yes. If you haven't read it, you can borrow my copy. Discusses this whole topic. Please, we have those books on the shelves. More than happy. So I think this is something so important for us, especially as we enter the holiday of Purim. Purim in itself is a day that you can be very cynical about. First of all, it's so busy. We discussed this on Shabbos a little bit. How it's just like it's a very busy day. Also, a very normal day. If you think about the mitzvahs that we do during the day, it's like nothing. Like we're not blowing a shofar, shaking a lulav, which is like very different than the rest of our year. We're giving tzedakah, not talking about the yom. We're going to shul to hear Megillah. It's like, no, it's like, okay, it's not Shabbos, but we're here. I told us if you're going to be giving gifts, we just mentioned lasagna is a big CD. Like, it's like, how different is it than a regular day? Right? I'm having a suya.
We eat all the time.
And we eat all the time. So I really look at it as like, it's like a souped up day. It's like giving meaning to all the things that we do all the time, and we're doing everything in the extreme. And we're showing how everything that we do has chashivas. Everything that we do has, you know, significance, has importance to it. And we shouldn't belittle anything that we do. And Rabbi Sacks writes, I mentioned this idea to Chazon Josh Lipschitz, and he said, oh, Rabbi Sacks. What's the opposite of cynicism? I googled this today. I was curious. What's the opposite of cynicism?
A great faith.
What? Right. Faith, maybe positive. I don't know. Like, what do you think?
Just like ultimate acceptance.
Acceptance. Mm-hmm. So, hope. Maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. The opposite, right?
Mm-hmm. That's so.
Plastic. That's nice.
Tikva, right? Mm-hmm. So hatikva, yeah. So hope is, but cynicism says like, oh, come on, everything's going to always be the same. You think you're going to change a little bit? No way. Come on.
Optimism.
That's optimism,
I'm
yeah.
I just don't share my thoughts. I fear being wrong. We're all cynical.
Good thing, yeah. So the girls that raise their hand in my class, I do not call on them. I only call on the kids that don't raise their hand.
I do not want to be in your class.
A lot of fun too.
Only this kind of class.
So the truth is, Rabbi Sacks has a beautiful word. He says that there's a difference in optimism and hope. Optimism, he says, is something that you just say like, it's going to get better. How? I don't know. It's going to get better. Hope says that, how's it going to get better? We together, okay, I'm going to take your hand and take your hand, and we're going to work on this.
That's so beautiful.
To make this better. And he says, he has an article he wrote 6-7 years ago. He's still writing articles. It's amazing. Him and Lubavitcher Rebbe. So, every week. It's unbelievable.
Crazy.
Another Sefer's coming out. I was in iClose, and it says Rabbi Sacks wrote a new book.
Whoa, it's crazy.
I don't know.
There's an email. The book's coming out.
So,
really cool.
He wrote an article about Life is Beautiful, the Holocaust movie. And funny, that's where like the conversation went with about the Holocaust. But he says the following. There's like a paragraph in there about this. He says what's amazing about the Megillah is that it turns tragedy into comedy.
Into comedy?
Into comedy, right? Like, think about how we practice the Megillah.
True.
And this year, one of my kids said, I want to make a siyum. Okay? Because she said one of her friends made a siyum and had a party. So she said, I want to make a siyum. So I said, great, let's learn the Megillah. And so we're learning like 10 psukim, you know, we try to do it every night. And there's some pretty gruesome psukim in there for an 8-year-old to hear, right? It's not easy.
Oh gosh, yeah, the book.
Oh, you got the comic one?
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's intense, right?
My mom actually, she's much better about that. It had the picture of the hanging, very graphic, and I'm like, oh my god, I wanted to see the book. I texted Ellie, did you see it at this farm sale? I just wanted him to look at it.
Yeah.
He bought it for me, and I'm like, I would not have bought this.
The Haggadah one is very good.
Okay.
It's really cool.
This is very good too.
For like a 12-year-old.
We're not a 4-year-old.
Like,
yeah.
I don't need him to be seeing pictures of people being hung and being like, what's going on here? And I'm like, I don't know.
Right.
You don't know. Never seen that before.
Right. Yeah. But it really makes the story very well. It's great. So learning this with an eighth, like I was just like put my like wow, this is a very intense. And then it's like, and then Achashverosh had to write a note to all the Midinos HaMelech saying that the Jews are allowed to defend themselves, right? They're allowed in the law. They're allowed to defend themselves and then take bear arms against the people that are going to try to kill them. It's like you're learning. It's like, oh my god, this is very intense. It was very scary. But what happens, right? Contemplating their so nearly catastrophic fate, Jews found that laughter was stronger than tears. Sure. Megillah turns tragedy into comedy. The banging and clapping on Haman's name teaches us, even as children, to recognize evil, but not to fear it. Purim's festivities are the most eloquent testimony I know to the unbreakable spirit of a people who more than most have walked through the valley of the shadow of death, but kept an unshakable hold on life. Wow. The American sociologist Peter Berger calls humor a signal of transcendence, something within us that points to something beyond us. Nowhere do we sense this more than on Purim, when laughter defeats tragedy and reaffirms hope. Right? Celebrating Purim in the way that we do, almost laughing through the entire Yontif, is a way to eradicate Amalek. Right? The hopeful nature of Purim is such. In fact, the Rambam Paskins, such a non-Rambam halacha, the Rambam writes, L'asid lavo, in the future, all holidays are going to be nullified. It's a big statement, and that's very hard to comprehend. Yes. Except for
Purim.
Purim. Because there's something within Purim, this special nature of Purim, that we need forever. Right? We need the hope. We need to have that for ourselves. Hope that we could change. Hope that things around us could be better and more meaningful. Right? And when we have that within itself can destroy. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.